Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to our half-hour English feature program. I'm Susie Hodges. Coming up on today's program, Pope on Abuse Crisis. Pope Benedict refers to his emotional meeting in Malta last weekend with clerical sex abuse victims and said he had promised church action to confront the crisis. Poor and excluded. With the help of Caritas, we examine the issue of poverty and social exclusion in Europe, where some 80 million people live below the poverty line. And greening our planet. As more than a billion people around the world prepare to mark Earth Day this week, we look at the important role played by the Catholic Church in speaking out against damage to our planet's environment. Benedict recalled his emotional meeting in Malta last weekend with victims of clerical sex abuse, saying he shared with them their suffering and assured them of church action on the issue. Lydia Kane tells us more.
Having just returned from a papal visit to the Mediterranean island of Malta, Pope Benedict made a point on Wednesday of reflecting on this voyage during his weekly general audience in a sunny St. Peter's Square.
Dear brothers and sisters, this past weekend, I had the joy of visiting Malta.
The Holy Father spoke to the thousands gathered of his joy at being able to celebrate the 1950th anniversary of St. Paul's shipwreck on the island and recalled other events and encounters over the course of last weekend. One encounter during his visit was to meet with a group of victims who were sexually abused as children by priests in a church-run orphanage on the island. He recounted this meeting while speaking in Italian to pilgrims, saying that he shared with the victims their suffering and emotionally prayed with them, assuring them of church action.
Ho condiviso con loro la sofferenza e con commozione ho pregato con loro, assicurando l'azione della Chiesa.
The Pope went on to praise the Maltese people for the vitality of their faith and in their respect for the dignity of the unborn and the sacredness of marriage.
The Christian vision, so deeply rooted in Maltese life and culture, continues to provide inspiration for meeting the great social and moral challenges of the present time. The vitality of the faith in Malta was evident in the joyful celebration of Mass before the Church of St. Publius.
Pope Benedict also again noted the positive example St. Paul can provide to young people as they make their journey through this life.
As a port of Valletta, I challenged Malta's young people to look to St. Paul's spiritual journey as a model for their own, to let their lives be changed by an encounter with the risen Christ, and to trust that God's loving plan is more powerful than any storm or shipwreck along the way.
During the audience, there were warm tributes from the English contingent in St. Peter's Square to the Holy Father, who celebrated the fifth anniversary of his pontificate this week.
Most Holy Father, the English-speaking pilgrims and visitors are happy to have this opportunity to congratulate you on the happy occasion of the fifth anniversary of your election to the See of Peter.
We are a group of canonists from Canada, here visiting the Dicasteries of the Holy See, and we were privileged to be here for the occasion of the fifth anniversary of our Holy Father, Pope Benedict.
And in conclusion, Pope Benedict returned the compliment by greeting all those English-speaking pilgrims who had come from as far apart as Scandinavia, the Philippines, and Canada. I'm Lydia O'Kane.
The tragedy of poverty in Europe was the top item on the agenda at a recent plenary assembly in Brussels of Catholic bishops from more than 20 European countries. It may come as a surprise to many to know that even in a wealthy continent like Europe, around 80 million people live below the poverty line. Bishops at the meeting quoted figures showing that one European out of 10 is living in a home where no one works, and the global financial crisis has caused a significant rise in unemployment throughout the continent. One of those who attended the plenary assembly of the bishops' conferences of the European Community was Ernie Gillen, president of Caritas Europa. He says more and more Europeans are falling into the poverty trap as a result of the global economic crisis.
For the time being, we are talking about 85 million people who are poor in the European Union. That makes 70% of people living at risk of poverty. And the figures are very alarming. Of course, if you are meeting people who are experiencing poverty, you are aware that today those people are much more under pressure than year before, because the whole depression in the economy puts the whole pressure nowadays on poor people and not on bankers, for example. Nevertheless, were at the origin of the so-called financial crisis. So let's say from a psychological point of view, the situation is worse today than it was. And statistically speaking, there are today, because of the unemployment, which is growing, there are more people who are living under the poverty line than last year. And there will be more, even more people in the next months.
In 2010 is the European year to combat poverty and social exclusion. And Caritas Europa appeal to people to look at the issue of poverty and social exclusion in a new way when it launched its poverty paper earlier this year to mark this event. In the report, Caritas highlights what poverty policies can do to prevent the spiral of poverty from taking place, and calls for the vision of zero poverty in Europe. Gillen told us more about their findings.
Caritas Europa launched this poverty campaign because poverty is simply a scandal. Every human being has the right to sufficient means for a decent life. Nobody should live in poverty because of unjust structures or unfair conditions. You know that poverty is not an objective phenomena. We have to define it within a given society. If we are looking what is going on in Albania, Moldova, Russia, you have different types of poverty. Then if you are looking at the big cities, London, Paris, Brussels, Rome, there again you will find another type of poverty. So we have to look at poverty in the different contexts. And that makes it so hard to have a common definition. Nowadays, there is a big discussion in the scientific world, but among politicians as well. Should we consider only the extreme poor people as being poor people, or should we really look at people who can't participate in the society? We think that it's important to have a more broad definition and understanding of poverty, because poverty is a multifacial situation, it's a multifacial phenomena. You can be poor because of your health conditions, you can be poor because of your job situation. There are people working, they are called working poor. You can be poor because you have not the good education. So there are a lot of reasons why you can be considered to be a poor person. And the manifestation of that is you can't participate in the society with your full potential. This means as well that the society is losing a resource. So we have to accept, as Pope Benedict has put it so clearly in Caritas in Veritate, we have to look at people being resources in a society. We can't simply afford to lose the potential of persons in our society. So that's why the society is poor if there are simply people living under their potential in that society.
You talked there, as you say, about people not realizing their potential. And I noticed that your paper is called Poverty and Social Exclusion. And is this part of the problem, is that poor people, it's not just, as you say, their physical and material needs, but it's also their emotional and social needs. They're somehow being cut out from society.
You are right. If an individual person is a homeless person, for example, he is an isolated person. A lot of elderly people are living in homes. They are living in an isolated situation very often. People with disabilities, they are living in a situation of isolation. So you can look at that from a technical point of view, or you can look at it from a moral point of view. And social exclusion, that's not only a technical problem. Technical problem can be solved by the state, by the politicians. But as a society, we do have a moral and a spiritual problem to face. And that's not only the problem of the person being isolated, being alone in that society, but again, it's a matter of the whole society, of the community. And we think that the community can bring a lot of relief to isolated people and really alleviating poverty in a very concrete way, and not with big means. But what you need is a person encountering another person, looking at that other person in a good and a positive way, accepting that person as being a human being.
Looking at Europe, which of course has become much more wealthy over the past decades, I mean, how has the face of poverty changed there? I mean, it must be much less visible than it was. I mean, you don't see people running around barefoot on the streets any longer, which you might have seen, you know, 70 years ago.
Yeah, nevertheless, there are people living in extreme poor conditions in Europe as well. If you go to Albania or if you meet people in Moldova, they are living in very, very poor conditions. So we should not think that today there are no longer extreme poor people living in Europe. There are people fighting to survive in our society. Of course, this extreme poverty is not a major phenomena, but nevertheless, one extreme poor person is one extreme poor person too much.
And what preventative measures can be taken to stop people sliding into poverty? As you said, it's a multifaceted problem.
I really think that what the society as such can do is changing its view on poor people. So if we as members of a society meet anywhere in a street, in a cafe, in a restaurant, in a hospital, a poor person, we should act. We are able to act. So it's not delegating that to the state or to the government, but there the society in itself can become a witness of the love of God, but can become a witness of the citizenship we do share with all the people. So making poverty a concern of all and each one, that's a possibility to make a big change in our own behavior and to prevent poverty right from the beginning.
And what are Caritas's main initiatives in this field? How are you trying to tackle this problem of poverty?
Caritas in Europe is running social services, so a lot of Caritas organizations do provide direct services to homeless people or to children in need or to families in need. Another type of intervention, which is very key to Caritas in Europe and Caritas in the world, is that we are fighting on a political level as well. It's our duty to convince those in charge that they have to take care about everyone living in this society. And that's our role as an advocate for poor people, as an advocate for a better society.
In your press release, you talk about how poverty affects the person not just in his and her body, but that person's soul and his or her life, and it even affects the community where he or she lives. Can you expand a bit on that?
The community is not something simply given. The community is built every day, every hour, every minute by the people being part of that community. And so if everybody simply is using the community as a resource for himself or herself, this cannot work. So what we need is a concrete building of communities, an effort everyone is trying to strengthen the community. And even poor people can, in that sense, invest some of their energies in that community. So if someone, for example, is begging, then he is inviting the community to react. And we should not look at that situation of begging as being someone who does not belong to that community. That person is giving us an opportunity to integrate that person. And when we are then simply offering money, that's not enough. That person is holding his hand not only to receive money, but to receive eye contact with the giver, to receive relationship. And as Pope Benedict has clearly told us in Deus Caritas Est, charity is not a technique, it's a matter of the heart.
I was speaking to Ernie Gillen, president of Caritas Europe. People, regardless of race, gender or income, have a moral right to a healthy, sustainable environment. This was the founding principle behind the decision by environmental campaigners to mark April the 22nd each year as Earth Day, in order to remind people of the importance of protecting the health of our planet. Well over a billion people around the globe now participate in Earth Day activities, making it the largest secular civic event in the world. And this year, the movement is marking its 40th anniversary. The Earth Day Network is a US-based umbrella organization whose mission is to broaden and diversify the environmental movement worldwide. But it's not just secular organizations who are concerned about the issue of environmental degradation. Pope Benedict, who has been dubbed the Green Pope by a number of commentators, has spoken out frequently about the importance of protecting God's creation. He has described the need to confront climate change as a moral obligation and points out that it's the world's poorest people who will suffer the most from its consequences. Kathleen Rogers is the president of Earth Day Network in the US, and she spoke to us about the importance of this annual event and how the Catholic Church and lay people are getting involved.
Well, Earth Day is now, as I said, in 192 countries. We divide the actions around Earth Day into two main areas. The first is service. People are very excited every year, and a growing number of people, as I said, 1.5 billion people, about participating in community and local activities to clean up their community, to plant trees, to replace light bulbs, to create school gardens, and to do many, many wonderful things. And those kinds of activities, I think, would never happen without Earth Day. But the real activity, I think, takes place worldwide, has a very strong civic action component. And people will take concerted action to write to their local members of their legislatures, to be involved with their national governments, to persuade them to take much broader, much more significant political actions on Earth Day. And we will have major statements from at least 100 governments on Earth Day this week, from countries as diverse as Mozambique, Russia, China. Most countries will have something significant to say on Earth Day about the vision that they have for their countries to go green. And I think there's a lot of hope worldwide that the 40th anniversary actually will mark the beginning of a transformation from one type of economy to the new one, to move away from the what I have to call the filth of industrialization, from toxics, pollutants, and certainly fossil fuels.
Now, Pope Benedict has been called by a number of people the Green Pope, so to speak, and he's spoken about the need for stewardship of creation, the protection of creation, the care, responsible use of creation. How was this message received by the Earth Day Network, and how is the Catholic Church actually involved?
Well, I think that's one of the most exciting developments, and it's not just for this Earth Day, but the Pope has been, I think, aptly called and correctly called the Green Pope for a couple of reasons. And it started more than a year ago, two Christmases ago, he made his first really significant pronouncement about stewardship of the Earth. But I think the Pope has gone even a step further, and why I'm particularly delighted with his action is because he also talked about accountability with respect to people, and not just people with money, but the poor. And one of the challenges that we have in the climate debate, which I think Holiness has directly addressed, is the idea that as we create a solution to the fossil fuel crisis, that we must protect the ability of the poor to both continue to conduct their lives and to become more successful in their own lives, but also to protect the health and safety of children. And so his actions are really important for two reasons. One, because he's a voice of authority. There are close to probably a billion Catholics worldwide, and his voice is incredibly important. But also because he's addressed the equity issue. He cares about the impacts of going green and the impacts of the fossil fuel disaster on the poor. And for me personally, that's very gratifying.
Do you have anything else? I know there's a lot that you could speak to about this subject.
Yes, I think one of the great things about Earth Day is the service component. And Earth Day Network has created a vehicle for personal action called A Billion Acts of Green. And we're already up to about 25 million actions in honor of Earth Day, and we just launched Billion Acts of Green. And I know that if the Catholic population hears you and hears this address, that if they decided to do an act of green, it's very easy to find a way to register your act of green by going to Earth Day. And the Catholics alone in the world could help us reach a billion acts of green all by themselves. So we're encouraging Catholics worldwide to take an action on Earth Day, and we've been extremely gratified by the Catholic parish priests around the United States and in other countries that are getting this message out to their parishioners.
That was Kathleen Rogers, president of Earth Day Network, speaking to Irene Lagan.
What about flowering fields? Is there a time?
Irish priest Father Sean McDonagh is a renowned environmentalist and author of more than half a dozen books on ecology and religion. He says, unfortunately, the unusually cold winter just experienced by the US and Europe has led many people to question the reality of global warming.
A difficulty for people like myself living in Europe in the last 4 or 5 months, because we've had the coldest winter for about 50 years, and many of my friends have come up to me and said, oh, your climate change now, are you changing your view on that? The reality is that between November and January, November 2009, January 2010, they are the warmest 2 months on record since they began in the 1850s, if you include the whole world. These are statistics that came out from Monash University in March of 2010. So the reality is climate change is happening. Now, the religious people like ourselves really need to keep up the pressure, because ultimately the tragedy of climate change is that the people who did least to cause it, like the people of Africa, the people of Latin America, or the people of Southeast Asia, they will suffer most. So it's a question of justice, and it's a question of distributive justice, that people who live in rich countries like myself and many of the people who will be listening, say in North America, Europe, or Japan, the way we use fossil fuel is having this very negative impact on the climate, and particularly the climate for poor people. So in this time when people are trying to undermine the credibility, I believe religious people should be out there shoring up the argument with our moral and religious underpinnings. Because ultimately, as Pope John Paul II said in the 1990 document, Peace with God the Creator, Peace with All Creation, and as Pope Benedict has said in the encyclical Caritas in Veritate and in his January 1 message this year, ultimately ecological issues are moral issues. And as I give you the example of Kenya, in the Antaplano area of Kenya, if malaria is coming and ravaging the lives of poor people, of children, and actually causing people to die, then that is a major, major moral issue for those of us who are creating the context for that to happen.
Could you give us any details of a green project that you visited or saw being set up? It could even be, if not in a developing country, even in Europe, anywhere in the world. Have you got anything that springs to mind?
Yes, in the Philippines in the 1990s, the group I work with are the Columban missionaries. We have worked all over the Philippines in pastoral work and in schools. But we did set up, we have a parish in the very heart of Metro Manila, which is a city in the capital of the Philippines of about 12,000 people. So we set up what was called CELS, the Center for Ecological Learning, about an hour and a half outside Manila. So we took 2 hectares of land there and tried to set out to farm in a very ecological way. In other words, not to use pesticides, insecticides or herbicides. We tried to use local indigenous plants with traditional forms of rice and corn, traditional forms of root crops. So it's become a working farm, but it also has become a centre where people come from Manila, particularly school children. They can come there for a day and see how people can meet their basic needs for food and clothes and shelter. We have also, on the cell project, we generate our own electricity, our own energy. And so it gives them an example of not just the presentation, the theology of ecological issues, but a very concrete example of how people can begin to live in a more sustainable way.
And has it brought concrete advantages for them, you know, apart from the moral, shall we say, kudos that they get from this? They've, you know, been won over to a more green outlook.
Oh, sure, because it sees that it shows them very clearly how they can use energy in a more efficient way. It shows them also how they can cut down on their waste production, because that's a very big issue in almost every aspect of the world, in rich countries or in poor countries. So it's a mere centre, but it's a centre of both education, but by sharing a vision with people, but also that vision is put into practice. So the hope is that people going back to their local communities can bring some of these ideas, for example, on waste management, on sharing water in an efficient way, on making sure that sewerage facilities are developed in a way that will not pollute. Because one of the big issues in climate change, for example, last year in 2009, with the terrible hurricanes or typhoon in Manila, that sewerage water actually contaminated the drinking water and led to extraordinary outbreaks of waterborne diseases. So people remember that, and here is an example of people working in a way. It's very certain that the drinking water and water that's contaminated do not come together.
I was speaking to Sean McDonough, Catholic priest and environmental activist.
What about flowering fields? Is there a time? What about all the dreams that you said was yours and mine? Did you ever stop to notice all the children dead from war? Did you ever stop to notice this crying earth as we make sure?
That's all for today. Thanks for listening. I'm Susie Hodges. We'll be on the air again at the same time tomorrow, and you can check out our website at any time on www.vaticanradio.org. Laudato Jesus Christus.